Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Casey, and I'll be joined shortly by frequent co-host Dennis Wissman. Today, we're welcoming back Chris Mamula. We talked with Chris about 2 years ago about his early retirement experience, and we thought it was a good time to check back in on how things are going and what he's learning. Chris Mamula used principles of traditional retirement planning combined with creative lifestyle design to retire from a career as a physical therapist at the age of 41. After poor experiences with the financial industry early in his professional life, he educated himself on investing and tax planning. Now he draws on his experience to write about wealth building, do-it-yourself investing, financial planning, early retirement, and lifestyle design at the website Can I Retire Yet, which was the winner of the 2019 Plutus Award for Best Retirement Blog. Chris's writing has been featured in MarketWatch, Dough Roller, Business Insider, and Rockstar Finance. He is also the primary author of the book Choose FI, Your Blueprint to Financial Independence. So Chris, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's always a pleasure talking to you guys.
I'll tell you, it's great to talk with you again. And for those who didn't hear our first conversation, could you share your story of deciding to retire at 41?
Yeah, sure. So I guess if I kind of just start from the beginning, my wife and I both came from pretty very average backgrounds. We were both first generation college graduates and kind of went down that road of like you go to school and get an education and get a good job, and that's the path to success. And we both kind of did that and excelled at it. I guess within a couple of years, we kind of realized like, I was a physical therapist, and me particularly, I just kind of realized like, this is not what I want to be doing for the next 40 or 50 years. But there was no like FIRE, financial independent, retire early community back then. And we had no role models. And so basically we were just kind of living a pretty, we felt pretty normal lifestyle. And, but we were living off of my wife's salary and just saving mine with the idea of we were just going to build some financial security and kind of wing it. In the process of that first decade of our marriage, we just kind of realized like we didn't think we were able to have kids. And so our plan was just to move west and kind of be like ski bums or kind of dirt bags and like go skiing and climbing and kind of build our lives around that and without like the typical financial insecurity that comes with that ski bum lifestyle. And then in 2012, I guess it would have been, we realized my wife was pregnant, and that was quite a shocker. And so up until that point, I was very financially illiterate, I would say, other than being a very good saver, but I had no idea about investing. I just never really looked into retirement planning because I thought like retiring at 40 was kind of ridiculous. And so at that point is when I really got serious and went down that rabbit hole. And I found that FIRE, Financial Independence, Retire Early community, and I became a part of it and started blogging and documenting our journey. And then in 2017, I was 41 and I left my career as a physical therapist, and I haven't worked since. And my wife continues to work part-time in her job at a company out of Washington, D.C., and we moved across the country from Pennsylvania to Utah to kind of live our dream and be in the mountains.
So we have a policy on Retirement Wisdom to not include much math in our podcast, but if I'm doing the math correctly, I think you must be in early on in year four of early retirement.
Yeah, it would have been 3 years last December, so like a little over 3 years.
Right. So what's life now compared to 2017?
I mean, like day-to-day life, it really couldn't be any different. So we were living in this small town in Pennsylvania. And now we live in a ski town in Utah. Back then, I was working a 40-plus hour week with a half-hour each-way commute. Now I mean, I do some work. I write at the blog and I've written a book since I left. So, I mean, I do some work, but it's really all kind of on my schedule because we live in a ski town. So in the winter, we ski 4 or 5, sometimes 6 days a week. And the summer, I'm out hiking, mountain biking, doing things kind of every day. And we kind of fit work in around life. Whereas before, I felt like we were just kind of always trying to squeeze life in wherever we could around our work schedule. So yeah, from that perspective, it really couldn't be much different or much more different.
Chris, a couple of years ago when we spoke to you, you mentioned the importance of structure as you were starting out on this journey. Has that changed at all for you? Has that become more or less important to you?
No, I think structure for me is really important. I kind of struggle with when I have too much freedom. And we're almost a year, I guess, now into this whole the pandemic as we're speaking here today. But yeah, that's still something I haven't quite figured out. I think I had a really good routine going up until everything changed and we became homeschool parents kind of overnight last March. And then we got into the summer and like our travel plans got canceled and our summer camps with my daughter got canceled. And we're still kind of figuring that out. So yeah, it's kind of thrown me a little bit. And this last year has been kind of hard, even though I think we're probably positioned about as well as you possibly could be for the situation that we're in. Just that loss of routine and structure has been kind of hard for me.
Yeah, you certainly haven't been alone. I think a lot of us have experienced that. But it seems like you still have consistent things that you like and try and do and have adjusted well to this. Being flexible around this time is so important, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think probably, I guess for me, some of the biggest things I kind of have struggled with, like some of the things that I did that I got a lot of purpose from is, I mean, I was super involved with my daughter, with her school. I would volunteer. I would go and be there whenever, anytime they needed something. And that was a big part of my life. And now, I mean, the schools have opened. We're in Utah, but like the parents aren't allowed at anything. So, I mean, I haven't been stepped foot inside the school and done anything with that. And then I was a physical therapist, like I said, in my prior life. And I was getting involved with an adaptive ski program. There's one client who I've been working with for the last 3 years who has a brain tumor, and I've just become very close with the family. But other than that, I mean, they're just not doing a lot with adaptive ski, so I've kind of lost that. So yeah, a lot of the things I was doing and wanting to do more of, getting involved in the community, there kind of is no community, I guess, at the moment. So yeah, that's kind of been an area that's been hard.
So if you look back now, Chris, 2017, what do you wish you knew then that you know now?
That's a hard question. I mean, I think I did everything really reasonably possible to prepare for retirement. And particularly on the financial side, I feel like we were extremely prepared. I guess having written a blog, I've been blogging for 7 years, I kind of have this diary and occasionally I'll look back and, you know, I was certainly writing about the softer side of retirement and like purpose and meaning and structure and all these things that we're talking about. But I kind of wish I would have spent even more time on that part because I think the financial part gets a lot of the emphasis in retirement planning. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can't know as far as like future market returns and interest rates and inflation and all that stuff. But, you know, you can kind of plan and have contingencies. But yeah, I just found that there's just not a lot of information. And I don't know that there maybe can be. I think it's very individual for everybody how you're going to adapt and adjust and find purpose and meaning. And again, find that structure. And everybody's a little bit different. And I wish I would have focused maybe even a little bit more on that, or at least maybe had a little more, I guess, maybe grace for myself as far as like having a little bit less expectations for retirement and yeah, just kind of going with the flow a little bit more.
So you wrote a very interesting piece that appeared in MarketWatch and it's titled "So Much of Retirement Planning is Wishful Thinking." And you covered a lot of topics in there. And I'm just wondering if you'd be willing to share, what have you learned about priorities, uncertainty, and change?
Yeah, I think I've gotten a lot of comments on that article. The one that's getting the most pushback is I wrote something about, you know, like, that if something's not a priority while you're working, it's probably not going to be in retirement. So you need to be honest with yourself and accept that. And a lot of people have pushed back and they're like, yeah, you know, I wanted to travel 6 months a year and I couldn't do that and things of that nature. And there's certainly things, like I said, like when I was working, I wanted to be more involved with my daughter, but like I couldn't go to everything at her preschool and be involved. And I couldn't just spend as much time as I wanted. And like I mentioned, I'm kind of I was always an aspiring ski bum, which I'm now a full ski bum, I guess. But I mean, I was still very involved with my daughter and I was still skiing 1 or 2 days a week back then. So I guess kind of what I was alluding to is like, I'll talk to people, like I've been meeting with readers of my blog and I'll say, you know, I'll say like, what do you want to do in retirement? And people will say like, I really want to get in shape and start exercising. And I'll say, well, what are you doing now? And they're like, well, I really don't have time. And to me, like, that's kind of what I'm talking about. Like if you already if something is a priority, then it's going to probably become more of a priority and you'll do more of it. But if you're not making time for something at all and you're working, I think that's probably a pretty good indicator that that's not a priority and you're using work as an excuse. And maybe I could have explained that better in my article, but I got a lot of pushback on that. And that's really what I'm getting at. And I think a lot of people do that, is they use work as an excuse and things will be better when. And I don't think they will. I think, you know, things are the way they are for a reason. And a lot of times it's because you're not making it a priority.
You've also written about another topic, semi-retirement. And I find in the work I do that often people see retirement as an all or nothing proposition. Either I'll never retire or 100% retired. So what do you see as the pros and cons of semi-retirement as an option for people?
Yeah, I mean, I think first off, I would just agree with you. Like I talk to readers all the time, and I talk to readers who are a decade or more older than me, and they have twice as much money as me, and they still don't know if they have enough, and they just get caught in fear. And I think a lot of that is because it is that kind of that dichotomy, you're working or you're retired. It's this all or nothing thing. And so there's a lot of benefits of the semi-retirement path, which really is, even though, you know, on the blog I say I retired at 41, I mean, it's really kind of more of semi-retirement. My wife still works part-time. I'm still doing some things. And so like just from a financial standpoint, I think, you know, particularly if you can retire at 41, you do it because you're a very good saver and you're probably comfortable with saving. And so then when you go to like spending down from your portfolio, there's this immediate sense of scarcity. And so just by continuing to have some earned income, instead of having scarcity, I think you have more abundance. One thing, if you're in a situation like my wife and I, where you're a two relatively high income earning household, it's not very tax friendly to live that lifestyle. And so when you make a lot less income, like, so say you cut from two full-time incomes to two half-time incomes, and you cut your income in half, your take-home pay is not even close to half because you're not, you know, you're cutting out that higher taxed income. So it's a very tax-friendly lifestyle, and I've written a detailed post on the math of that, and I promise we wouldn't talk too much about math, but it is an important thing to understand. I think the biggest challenge of early retirement is healthcare, and so if you can get healthcare through an employer, I mean, that's a huge advantage, and that's what we do with my wife. Even though she only works part-time, she's able to get health coverage for our whole family, which is a huge blessing for us, and that's a huge stress that's off our shoulders. And then just from the non-financial standpoint, and we talked a little bit about purpose and just having some routine and some structure in your life. And for all those things, I think they're all big advantages of just planning on incorporating some level of work, whether it's, you know, starting a hobby business, whether it's just consulting in your old career, whether it's just dropping down to part-time. There's a lot of options. And I think if people consider that more, that sense of fear would kind of go away or at least be eased.
Chris, how is the FIRE movement evolving in the pandemic?
I think that's a hard question. I can tell you my perspective is that the people that, like myself, who are already well down the road, I mean, I think that this is just a total justification for why you should be prepared. Because I mean, certainly when we looked at all the things that could go wrong, the whole world basically shutting down, not being able to travel, not being able to do anything socially, that wasn't on our list. But it's such a reason, you know, like if you're living paycheck to paycheck, again, like, this last year has not been easy for us, but I mean, we were so well prepared compared to everyone else. Like as far as when you become a homeschool parent overnight, and we already had two parents basically at home, and I was able to essentially kind of shut down what I was doing with my writing and just focus on her, on our daughter, and providing what she needed. So yeah, I mean, I think it's really a justification, and hopefully people will see that there's so much value in being prepared and, you know, having some financial independence. Now that said, I think if you're just starting, man, it's going to be really challenging. Like I look at my career as a physical therapist. I feel for people that were coming out of school last year, just graduating, and now that job market has just been kind of decimated. So it's going to be harder for people to get on this track, but the people that already were, or the people that are would consider it, I think this has been a great eye-opener for some of the value of being prepared and having some financial security.
So as I mentioned, you're now a certified ski bum. Not just an aspirational one. But to be fair, you've also done a lot of other things, as you mentioned, in retirement. Certainly, your involvement with your daughter's life is first and foremost, it sounds. But you also co-authored a book in retirement, in your early retirement, called Choose FI. Could you tell us a little bit about your book?
Yeah, so like I said, like my wife and I, we knew we always wanted something different. So we both graduated in like 2000 for her, 2001 for myself, from college. And then it was really over a decade until we got serious. And it was really just a matter of not thinking there was a reasonable possibility. And then when I found the FIRE blogs, like on one hand, they were just so influential on my life. They changed the way I look at things. They made me think of things different. They made me realize that investing and tax planning, these things that were just to me, like just inaccessible and I didn't even try and I just threw my hands up. They were very accessible. And so there was so much value for me in the FIRE movement, but there was also the original bloggers, I think, like it just felt so extreme to me. And like I felt what I was doing just didn't feel very extreme and I wanted to give a different perspective. And so that was kind of the purpose of the book, is just to make this concept accessible and to just to show the underlying principles that really almost anyone can apply to their life, to some degree at least. And so what we really did is just broke it down into five sections, which the first one is just changing the mindset and just kind of realizing that there is something different and maybe better possible if you're willing to open your mind to it and try to live a different lifestyle. And then we looked at, there's really only three levers you can pull. So there, each of them is a whole section of the book of spending less, earning more, and investing better. And then the last part is just, we kind of looked at like, what is next? And we kind of tried to break down that idea that, you know, this is that all or nothing and you don't have to retire, and just kind of thinking about what you want life to look like on the other side of financial independence and what do you do from there? So that is basically what the book is in a nutshell.
So between ski runs, what was the experience like writing a book, taking on a project like that?
Oh, I think it was great for me. We talked about just like that need for structure. And so I had this idea for the book. I've been blogging for a while. And my original idea was I was going to start a podcast and interview all these people who were influential on me and kind of just take the best of each of their message. And that was kind of my idea for the book. And then a couple of months ahead of that, like right when I was planning to retire, these two guys started what's called the Choose FI podcast, and it just exploded. And at first, honestly, I was a little bitter. I felt like they stole my idea and that was going to be my next project and that was going to turn it into a book. But then like, I really liked their messaging. I liked everything they were doing. So I just thought, what the heck, I'm going to reach out to them and say, you know, why don't we partner and we'll turn this into a book. And they were very open to it. And so that's kind of how it all evolved. So we had an agreement to do this probably 3 or 4 months before I left my job. And so I took the weekend off after I quit working. And that Monday, I started writing. Like that was kind of the first 2 hours of every day. I just worked on the book. And within 6 months, I had the first draft of it done. And it was just a great transition to have that structure, to have something to work on every day for a couple of hours a day. And it was just kind of it gave me purpose. And it's been nice to see the impact now that it's finally out. It's a long process to write a book from start to finish and getting it released, but it's very rewarding once you finally get it out there in the world.
That's great. And curious, now our thoughts are all beginning to turn toward the light at the end of the tunnel, the end of the pandemic, return to normal life at some point. What are some of your thoughts and goals for post-pandemic life?
I mean, for one thing, we definitely want to just get back to traveling, get back to reconnecting. So like I said, we moved across the country and we moved to an area of the country where we didn't really know anybody. And we found, so we're in Ogden, Utah, and we really just kind of fell in love with this community. And we were, between my daughter's school, between the outdoor community, between a church we got involved with, we were just really kind of finding our groove. And then like this, just the social aspects have really been challenging over the last 9 months to a year, I guess. So I really want to just kind of get back into getting involved with community. And also just want to get back into traveling and going back to, again, we're very close with our family on the other side of the country. And so to be able to start traveling again and doing those things and seeking more adventures outside of our area will be really nice. So those are our two big focuses, I guess.
Chris, when you mentioned in your article, so much of retirement planning is wishful thinking. You mentioned this, this line about change. It said, you said, making big changes requires acknowledging our fears and taking action in spite of them. How true at this time, huh? With all the change we've had to face. How did you apply some of that thinking to how you've been able to adapt and how you're adapting going forward? Because we all are faced with this tremendous change, and you said it so well in that article.
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of things. One thing, I think just if you really step back and like look at like what is the worst thing that can happen, and I think a lot of times you can mitigate those risks. And another strategy that I kind of use is just kind of just taking little bite-sized steps instead of like taking this problem, something like retirement, which is so overwhelming. And so, you know, doing something like semi-retiring and doing something like, for my wife, dropping down to part-time work. And I mean, we still made some massive changes. Like I let my license go. I'm not a physical therapist anymore. We moved across the country. Those are, I mean, I guess you can reverse anything if you wanted to work hard enough, but those are kind of one-way decisions. but we gave ourselves a lot of slack and leeway just by making more moderate and gradual changes in other areas. And I really think my background, I mentioned like how I love being in the mountains and I rock climb and I've done high altitude mountaineering and I'm a skier. And I think like people look at that as like this high risk thing. But I think when you're doing those type of activities, it really teaches you risk management and risk mitigation. And there's a quote I love. There's an American mountaineer named Ed Visters. And he says, his quote is, you know, getting to the top is optional and getting down is mandatory. And it kind of just reinforces that whole idea of risk management and remembering what is most important and what things can you not afford to lose. And then you can kind of mitigate those risks. And you know, a mountain's always there. You can always go back to it. But your life, you only get one time. So you can't take, I mean, anything can happen, but you don't want to take too big of risks where you're putting the odds too much out of your favor.
True. Great connection to your life experiences with how you actually have developed that kind of mindset. You know, thanks for sharing that.
Mm-hmm, sure.
That's a great quote.
It's funny. I shared that quote on a different podcast. It was quite a while ago. And a person was listening, and I think she was like, somehow knew his wife, and I got a free copy of his book that was autographed by him. So it ended up being kind of cool. So maybe somebody will be listening and I'll get something else from Ed Visters.
There you go. You never know.
Certainly jumped out to me. Absolutely.
So Chris, based on your experience, what's your advice for someone listening who wants to retire early?
Yeah. So I think I'm still like, my brain still works from that aspect of like, I was a physical therapist. And so that's a hard question. Like I hate generalized advice. And like, so if somebody came into my clinic and they said, my knee hurts, well, you could have arthritis. You could have just come down a ski run and blown out your ACL. You could just be starting to train and be overworking and have an overuse thing. So I really think an underdeveloped skill for most people is being able to step back and assess their situation. If that's something I think people have a hard time doing on their own, that's where something like an advisor or a coach can help you. But I really think you kind of need to look at your personal situation. And for almost everybody, there's one or two things that are going to be the great starting point. And like I said, we kind of looked in the book, like there's really only a couple of levers you can pull, whether it's spend more or spend less, earn more, or invest better. And so just looking at your own personal situation, if you're making $12 an hour as the sole breadwinner in your house, you probably have an earning problem. But you know, if you're part of a two-physician family and you're making $500,000 a year and you're having a hard time saving, then you need to look at the spending side. Or if you kind of feel like you have it locked in, but then you're losing your money in the markets because you're chasing the hottest trend with Bitcoin or whatever the story is of the week, maybe you need to focus on that. So I really think there's value in stepping back, assessing your situation, and figuring out what's going to be the most impactful lever to pull for you personally.
Great advice. And I can't agree more that it's usually personal. Everyone's circumstances are different, and generalized advice really is not one size fits all. It's something you need to step back, think through, and we find off of experimenting with what's going to work for you. Finding the right combination makes all the difference. So appreciate that comment.
Yeah, for sure.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us. I know people will get a lot out of hearing an update to your story, and wish you all the best going forward.
Thank you so much. And like I said, it's always a pleasure talking to you guys. You're a joy to talk to and to listen to. So thanks for having me back.
Thanks.
Same here, Chris. Thanks.
Great to talk again with Chris Mamula today. Dennis, what jumped out to you from our conversation with Chris?
It was hard to believe. It felt like yesterday, but it was April of 2 years ago that we spoke with Chris the first time. So clearly a lot has transpired between now and then. A lot of change has happened, generated largely by the pandemic that we've all been experiencing. I was glad to hear Chris talk about aspects of change and how planning and preparing and the things he had done beforehand have helped him in some regards, specifically on the financial side. He was well prepared, he said, on the financial side, but probably could have done more preparing on the non-financial side. And, you know, you go through this journey, and I think everybody's very different for everybody, clearly. But for Chris, he certainly had to adapt along the way. So being flexible, to be adaptable, these things help us. And he used the financial terminology of risk management. I like the way he did that because you can apply that to different parts of your life on the financial and the non-financial side. And he applied it to the side of his life that didn't necessarily relate to financial all the time. So he managed his risk by looking for smaller activities, things he can do to counteract the challenges that he was facing with regards to this change in his structure that happened. He couldn't visit his daughter's school anymore. He couldn't connect with the people he wanted to connect with all the time. So it became a different kind of lifestyle for him to have to adapt to, but he clearly was able to manage that. So that jumped out at me as pretty important message to take away. Joe, what about yourself?
It's three things that I'll highlight. And the first one was really his commentary about it's really different from everyone. I liked his advice that you can't really give general advice in retirement. I certainly believe that, that it's different for everyone. But what is a principle is that there is a lot of value in taking time to step back and assess your situation, either by yourself or with an advisor or coach, as he mentioned. And I think that's really the second point. And that's when we talked to him last time about, you mentioned it today, you can learn a lot from the principles of the FIRE movement. And one of the things that I remember and highlighting today is really is around values. What are those most important things to you? Whether you're pursuing FIRE or not, you want to really put those front and center. And I think that's an important part. Next up would be his comments on semi-retirement. And I think that people forget about that. If you really think about it, working all the time, never retiring. In the middle, there's this whole range of options called semi-retirement. And I think it opens up a lot of possibilities. Every single person that I'm coaching now is pursuing some version of semi-retirement. And ironically, none of them call it that. It's just the next thing they're going to do after the world of full-time work ends. But I think it really does provide a lot of flexibility, things that they can toggle up or toggle down depending on what's most important to them at the particular time. But it keeps them in the game and they really find a way to have the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I know your coaching helps people start to discover what's possible for them on that side, Joe. Because I think this is something that if people can shift their mindset towards other opportunities and they don't have to go from 100, they go down to 0. But if they cut it back and they phase, like you said, they take something else that they do, called semi-retirement, or they phase themselves down into a slower pace, they can actually adapt to what this next act is really like for themselves. They can see more about things. They can try to experiment with other things that they might like to balance their work part of their life. So it's a great mindset for people to continue to focus on that there are opportunities out there to semi-retire. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I think it's a good fit for people who are retiring for whatever reason, but they're not done yet. It gives them a way to channel their drive, channel their energy, get engaged in something that they're passionate about or might become passionate about, and see where it leads. But it really gives them a way to mitigate some of the stark challenges that come from, as you're talking about, the immediate transition, the cliff version of retirement.
Absolutely. Get curious about the options along the journey. It makes the journey more fun. It's great.
And then my last point is his commentary about when he looks back on it now, he wishes he could have spent even more time, although he was well prepared, even more time on the softer side of retirement, really the transition part, the purpose, etc. And I find in working with people that purpose tends to freeze folks because it sounds overwhelming. What's my new purpose? What is purpose exactly? And what I find is that people I work with end up going with what I'll call a multi-purpose retirement. It's not one big grand purpose at the outset. It might be two or three things that could emerge into a purpose down the road, but they have specific interests that are purposeful, and that leads them to perhaps discover their purpose later. But I think often, you know, it's very overwhelming and daunting to think I've got to go find my purpose by next Thursday.
Well said, a multi-purpose life.
There you go. So thank you for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. And our mission is to help people retire smarter by balancing their planning with more attention to how they'll invest their time, not just their money, in life after full-time work ends.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.